Forever Dog.
When these people have these libraries in their house, right? Let me just ask you a serious question, Julie. When these people got these libraries in their house, are you laughing? No, this is a serious question. All kidding aside, Julie, I'm going to ask a serious question. When these people got these libraries in their house, seriously, though. Come on. Come
yeah, no, I'm waiting for the question.
Is somebody tickling you or feet or something? You keep laughing while I'm trying to bring up this very...
No, please. Yes, I'm waiting for the question. I have the premise.
Okay. These people, when they get these, when they build these libraries in their house.
Yes.
And they get all these dirty old books on the wall.
Yes.
These heavy bound books. You ever read one of these heavy bound books? It's the most unenjoyable thing you've ever experienced.
Never in my life. I like a book I can toss in the air.
Yeah.
And sometimes it comes down and sometimes it doesn't.
There's people like, yes, let me take down my copy of Canterbury Tales. Let me take down this 11 pound, dirty, dusty, gold leaf. The only thing these books got going for them is that little string, that the automatic bookmark.
Well, do you ever floss with one of those?
With the automatic bookmarks? It's hard with these heavy books, I'll tell you that.
What, to floss with it?
To bring it into the bathroom and start flossing?
Oh, I don't even leave the library.
You just floss right in the library with it? Well, maybe that's what I'm doing wrong. And I'll tell you, they really frown on you doing it in a public library. They don't like when you start flossing.
Flossing with the ribbon bookmarks? What do you call them?
Floss with the automatic bookmark.
Why are you calling them the automatic bookmark?
Because it's sewn right in. It's automatic. You don't have to go get one.
Maybe you mean attached bookmarks?
Yeah, but it's automatic in the way that it's just like one step. Just flip the thing around, drop it right where on the page you left off. It's automatic.
You're doubling down as opposed to stick shift.
As opposed to stick shift. You get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the question?
Just about these dirty, dusty old books they have. Why would anybody want to read that version of a book? A thick, giant, hardcover book.
I mean, you certainly don't want to bring it to bed with you and snuggle up.
Yeah. You can only read in the library when you have one of those books. You can't take that book out of the library because, first of all, when it's in your own house, you still got to sign it out, probably, right?
You mean have, like, what is there, like a little, like you a can't library just use the card. Honor system?
No, you probably have to have a library card in your own house. And then you got to have a librarian work in there.
You have to get a licensed one. You can't just get one that's like in grad school for it.
You need a legit old school librarian to be there and be like, you'd be like, I'd like to check out this copy of, and they're like, shh. And I'm like, yeah, I'm paying $30,000 a month for the mortgage on this place. I think I can talk louder if I want.
What would be in your library if you were rich enough to have a library?
Oh, I'd have, what wouldn't I have in it?
I'd have like seven ladders, those ladders that go back and forth on wheels.
Oh, yeah. You know what we could do then? Ladder races.
That seems like such a neck-breaking idea because librarians are inherently unathletic people. Yeah. And then you have ladders on wheels. Yeah. Who just walked behind Brett?
I don't know. Brett's got people walking by. I guess he's doing a show at the bus station. I would do a thing like this, Julie. When I get a giant place like that, and I say when, not if. Giant place like that, you That's come great. By.
Okay.
We'll do ladder races. You go on one end of the library, I'm on the other end, and we do the kick push, and we see who gets the other side fastest.
I thought you were going to have it be like chicken.
No, those are ladder fights.
Coming towards each other in the first person to, well, I guess you can't turn. You can't really, could you put a steering wheel on these ladders?
Well, I'm not going to do no ladder fights with you. I don't fight with you. We would race.
But you said
we
would something about a race.
We would have some jaunty fun and race. But
you don't want to play chicken. You don't want to play chicken with. What if we get two nerds and we make them play chicken?
We make them do ladder fights, crashing into each other as hard as they can. Right?
It's not over until three lenses have been shattered on their horn-rimmed glasses.
What's the where's the key to the bathroom?
Do you ask people that? Because I always say the ladies' room because I think it sounds a little bit classier.
I just decide sometimes to take away the right of them denying me access. I go, I gotta go real bad.
I've heard you call it the toy toy.
I go, where's the toy toy? I gotta make. I gotta go boom boom.
I think sounds like Woody Allen.
He's in there.
He's in there with
for
one
a
of those
good
giant
time, writing
books
on the wall. For a good time, call Pennsylvania 6500.
See one of my see Rifkin's
oh
festival.
My god, that's the marketing budget on his movies now is bathroom walls. For a good time, see Rifkin's festival on demand.
Do you think that like people are looking at those posters of that new show with Marty and Steve Martin and Selena Gomez and thinking it's like the new Woody Allen movie?
I hope not. That show, actually, I'm interested in watching that show.
I can't wait to watch it. Mm-hmm. I would watch Marty Short just like, you know, not even read a book out loud, just like read a book.
Yeah. Just literally
I'd watch him do
read
anything. But the three of them on that poster, like part of me feels like this should be called, you know, like put it in the Woody Allen font and see if he gets confused. Just to be like, I don't remember making that movie.
Yeah.
It looks good. It looks interesting. It's a love triangle. like Woody Allen sees the poster, he's like,
about a young lady trying to choose between which 72-year-old man she lusts after.
Kind of.
Yeah, when I see a movie like that, I'm like, yeah, I want to watch that movie. And then you said the thing about the Addams Family.
What did I say?
You mentioned the Addams Family at one point in there.
Did I?
Brett, didn't Julie say something about
that? I probably did.
I didn't specifically catch it, but I can rewind the tape real quick and I'll let you know
It's in the Klausner canon, although I like the second one better than the first one. Doesn't that make me interesting?
That you like Addams Family Values better than Addams Family? Yeah.
I do.
I think it's a better movie. It's more fun.
It's so much fun.
Now, here's something to think about. Oh, there's this couple, right? Oh, there's a lady and she dresses all in black and has the tight dress with the hanging frills that look like she's just dripping
black sex.
Blood. And she's super sexy
super
looking.
Super hot, like vampire lady.
Oh, whoa. Well, what's your name? Ooh, Morticia. Ooh, well, that's the most exotic name I've ever heard. Oh, well, here comes her husband. Oh, look at him. What's his name? Gomez.
Honestly, though, at least the Addams Family, at least Morticia and Gomez had sexual chemistry as opposed to, and you know what I'm going to say next.
Herman and Lily Monster.
Because Lily, to me, was such a babe. I grew up thinking she was like, you know, and I mean, she was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes. Yvonne DiCarlo. Yes. And she has this, just like this cement truck goofball.
Oh, Lily.
You, me.
Now, now, Eddie, you must understand.
Like, everything is always like when he hauls off and starts with like his 50s father knows best stuff. It's the funniest thing I've ever
it's
heard.
Horrifying.
Now, Eddie, you and must then- realize that Grandpa wants you to just like, you're like,
it's
wait,
horrible. It's
I'm
horrible.
Getting advice from Frank, Frankenstein. Here's give me mm-hmm. advice.
No, Grandpa. Eddie's going to play Little League Baseball.
Imagine how much black lipstick they had to like remove that was Herman's. Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
Be like, wait, which water bottle is Herman's? Yeah. It's the one with the black lipstick on the straw.
The black. Oh, can you imagine the amount of the scrubbing that that. Those people had to do craft services, cleaning the glasses and the forks. Forks with just black lipstick all over them.
And they're like, oh no, I'm on Munster's duty today.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing Munster's duty.
I'm on stage 16.
Oh, now, geez. Now, Eddie. Grandpa.
Are there tacos today, Eddie? Yes. Are there tacos?
Yeah. Yeah, my name's Butch.
Butch?
No, Butch.
Are there tacos?
Yeah. Just imagine them eating. Although back then they probably had just like a shank of lamb. Like
You mean like a
mid-60s
the way that Hitchcock.
Food.
Well, also, wouldn't Hitchcock stop his set for like 2 or 3 hours to have, you know, like a roast and potatoes and a soup course and.
Yeah, I don't know, but I can picture that happening. We're just like the formalities of things. And then you think about that world, and then you think about the world we live in now where
everything is fast food.
Everything's fast food. It's just not fun. You know where the only place these days for me a slow meal is Jersey Mike's. Cuz usually
thank you. They'll give you the pickle course. Then the shredded iceberg lettuce course.
You go to Jersey Mike's. It's an experience. First, you meet with the greeter who says,
it's a raccoon.
What are you going to get? And you go, yeah, I'll get a number 10 on wheat. And he goes, great. Never see that. Never see that guy again. You never see that guy again.
Maybe he comes to your funeral.
Maybe he comes to your funeral. But. In to terms look through of the, your
like,
meal,
see if you have if there's any spare chains in your pockets.
It's not happening. That Jersey Mike's employee is out of your life. Then you go slide down the row. Now you're in front of the person with the toppings, and then they say, "What do you want?
The toppings master.
Do you want a Mike's way?"
No, this is when you start messing with them because you don't like you like having a Tom's
I just
way.
I don't like onions. I just don't want onions on the thing.
Okay, then just say Mike's way, no onions.
But I like to go the other way around. I go, no, I don't want it Mike's way, but I do want it this way. And I list everything but onions.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, you know, you could just say Mike's way without onions. I go, oh, yeah, I'll do that next time. And I never do
then
it.
Then you pay for it and then you throw it in the garbage.
No, then you never see that person again. They slide
what
you down.
To the sandwich?
Sandwich gets wrapped up. Now you're at the register.
Okay.
And they say, do you want to make this a combo?
What's the combo?
Drink and chips.
Oh, they've got those bags of chips behind the counter?
Yeah.
What if they started offering like baked potato, mashed potatoes?
Oh my God. I would say, I would order and then just tell them to hold the goddamn sandwich. I'd say, I want a goddamn number 10 on wheat. Hold the goddamn tuna. Hold the goddamn roll. And I'll have a side of mashed potatoes.
Right.
And one of those weird fountain cream sodas you have. Agave cream soda.
I just think it would be a good idea if Jersey Mike's started having mashed potatoes as a side. Because every sub place just has chips in a bag.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of places that have fries as an option.
No. And no one has mashed potatoes as a side.
Are there people that have baked potatoes as a side? Hamburger places, maybe.
I don't know.
Hamburger Hamlet? Is Hamburger Hamlet still alive?
Hamburger Hamlet, there's only one left, I believe. I believe the main Hamburger Hamlets are gone.
And is that what they do instead of actual Hamlet, how we have Shakespeare in the Park?
Yes. Well, it's the way the it's Hamburger Hamlet here is like a McDonald's commercial. Mm-hmm. So it's like Mayor McCheese doing Hamlet. That's Hamburger mm-hmm. Hamlet. Where mm-hmm. he's like, what light shines through thon window?
I never read Hamlet.
And then his
Did you read Hamlet?
Special sauce is dripping down. What do you think? Seriously. Take a you've known me long enough.
You read Romeo and Juliet in school.
No.
Have you read The Monster at the End of This Book?
The Monster at the End of This Book. That's closer to what I was reading rather than Hamlet.
I never read Hamlet. I remember being in a Shakespeare class and like having a full-blown panic attack because I knew a test was coming up. Mm-hmm. And it was like reading another language. Mm-hmm. I could not understand what the guy was saying. Mm-hmm. And then there's also those Shakespeare jokes mm-hmm. when he's like, 'tis a glorious sun, but a despicable moon. And then he'd point to his butt.
And then people like
lose their minds. Honestly, I wish it were that controlled. It was more like, people screaming.
Oh, that is just horrifying to me that's what people would think would pass for comedy.
Well, speaking of comedy, the guest that just showed up in the waiting room is a icon of comedy. Oh, a comedy.
Well, hold on. First, I break.
Hold on. Brett. 1 second.
Yep, sorry.
Welcome to Double Threat.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Tom.
And I also have an idea before we bring our guest on.
What's the idea?
Well, it's late August or mid-August. And I don't know about you, but all my mental health professionals have gone and fucked off. And I was just thinking about how... how that's not ideal that all mental health professionals take off August. And then I was like, oh, Tom and I should just watch What About Bob mm-hmm. today for the episode.
Sure.
So should we just do that and tell Paul Giroux that we'll see him another time?
I think we should talk to Paul.
Okay, let's do that.
I would say if I was a mental health care practitioner, is what I do.
You'd only be open in August.
I would double down. I'd say, you know what? You got problems in August and December.
The doctor is
That's
in.
When I lean into it. That's when I'm more available than I've ever been.
Yeah. Try to get me away from you.
Yeah. I'd be working round the clock. Yeah. You got a problem? What? Hold on. Okay. Hold on. I got another one with a problem on the other line. Yeah. I'm going to merge this call. Yeah. I got
you two. You guys talk to each other.
Yeah. You two talk to each other. I got a third person's coming unglued. I'll be right back.
Unglued.
Look, I don't have any degree in any of this. I would just be like, boy, you complain a lot.
You know what you could do? You could Ted Lasso him. You could coach him.
I would just be like, yikes, you got some problems.
You should meet. Oh, you know what you could do is you could just say like, you know, what make you feel better is talking to a guy with even worse problems. And then you just push him off on the next guy.
I'm going to put you on this next one. He's in real bad shape.
That's Curtis Sliwa.
Yeah. He's like, I'm surrounded by cats. I can't get all these cats out. Because you know that's like a big part of his
I know. His it campaign. Bums me out representationally.
He's the cat. He would have been the cat daddy of New York City. Well, he could still win.
We and still then he could be.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should bring Paul let's bring on. Paul Sorry, in. Brett. Let's do that again.
Oh, well, speaking of working around the clock and leaning in, this guest in the waiting room, what doesn't he do? This is a podcaster, an actor. He's on the show Black Monday on Showtime. You've seen him. You know him. You love him. Mr. Paul Scheer coming in the Zoom right now.
This is exciting. This is exciting. Now, this is one of these
this
gets.
This is our pal. He's this is one a of get. These guys. He's a get.
Yeah.
He's a get and not the kind of get that they talk about in the Coen Brothers movie, A Serious Man, which is a way to annul your marriage in the Jewish faith.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is one of those guests who, first of all, will know who I am. It just looks right off the bat as exciting.
Oh, look at this. Look at look his at background.
That. Oh, my
look
goodness.
Look at his background. As look I at live what Paul breathe. Oh, my gosh.
Look at this. No, this is a total thrill. We got this is an A-lister on the show, and we usually don't get these. Usually it's a parade of just refuse. But this is a true A-list guest.
Paul Scheer, welcome to the show.
I am so excited and not deserving of this kind of an intro. I'm sorry even for my delay because I was trying to make sure that my screen was right for y'all.
We're so happy you're here, and we're so happy that you've managed to figure out a way to put one of our t-shirt designs behind you. And Tom mm-hmm. was just about to say how excited he was to have you on because he thinks that guests don't know that he's a host.
Oh,
he's
had a. I think.
Well,
you're a call screener in their mind.
No,
there have been like three drag queens that we.
They think it's Julie's show. They think it's Julie's show, and that Brett and myself are two producers working on Julie's show.
Brett's the call screener, and you're mm-hmm. the producer, and you're kind of giving Julie her notes to make sure she stays on track and stuff. You'll interject, yeah. You're like kind of like a lower tier Baba Booey. I feel like that's how people.
He's a higher tier. He's Papa Booey.
I will say, and I said this to Julie last week. The two of you together doing a show to me is the equivalent
exhausting.
this is the equivalent of creating a super team. Two podcast greats joining forces mm-hmm. and great to see that Tom took the lower position of, producer and segment producer. I should say. Yeah.
It's like me accepting my role on the team. We want to win. Maybe I won't score as many points as I used to, but the goal is the championship is the big goal.
And I'll just finish Paul's thought there. When you add me in the mix, then it's like it's like off the charts. You know,
so yeah. Paul, this is a guy who he's usually not in this room. We think it looks like he's in like the W Hotel.
Yeah, it looks very cool.
Yeah,
thank you.
It is what. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. He's our producer. His name is Brett.
I know, and I feel like I've heard. I mean, look, I'm not watching the show when I listen to the show, but I've heard Brett on the show, mm-hmm. haven't I? Yeah.
Any notes?
No, I mean, look, this is, I'm telling you, I'm honored to be here. I don't want to get in the way of anything. I want to wreck the magic.
No notes.
And the thing Brett is, like, if Julie is, say, Julie is like Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah.
Julie's Michael Jordan. Maybe I'm a little more of a, like a Rasheed Wallace type, like a little more of a loose cannon.
Wow, I like that.
Brett is like he's like a John Green type. I would say Brett reminds you of John Green, the guy who threw the beer that started the riot.
This is the Malice at the Palace kind
of? The Malice at the Palace.
Okay. All right. Well, look, this is, this is interesting. I was going to say Brett was more of like a Jarrett Dudley. You were more of like
I'll take that.
Yeah. You are more of a Montrez. And then Julius LeBron. You know, I'm keeping it updated. I will say this much. I'm sure it has not been spoken about that much on the show, but my kids have watched Space Jam 2 so many times.
No.
And you talking about Michael Jordan, one of the favorite jokes of their existence. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably the people that it truly worked for was in Space Jam 2 when you think Michael Jordan is going to be in Space Jam 2. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you think, and they go, okay, we got MJ. Uh-huh. And in comes Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, what? And they're like, I'm just watching the game. They're like, get out of here, Michael Jordan. And then that's,
tell us everything about Space Jam 2.
I could talk about Space Jam 2 at length because.
How many times have your kids seen it?
Oh, Julie,
over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's upward. We're probably in the 15s or 20s at this point.
And have they seen the first one?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so they already love that one.
We love that one. We love Space Jam 1. We love Space Jam 2. We love Like Mike. Little Bow Wow.
Sure. And Lip Nicky.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Lip Nicky is in that. And also, very interestingly enough, the kid from Friday Night Lights and Fargo and Breaking Bad. I'm forgetting his name right now, but he was married to Kristen Dunst. Jesse Plemons. He's one of the kids. And I'm forgetting everybody's name right now. The dad from Back to the Future who left after the first movie.
Crispin Glover is in it.
Fred Armisen is in it with no lines.
Crispin Glover runs the orphanage,
yes,
I believe.
Stop it.
Yes, true.
In Like Mike.
And Robert Forrester is the coach. Well, yeah, he's the coach of the team. And Eugene Levy is the owner of the team And yeah,
that's one of those casts where you're like, are we sure? Like, we have all these, will somebody want to write a different script? This is like, it's like a summer stock production almost. Like, you guys stand, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. sit tight. We have you for 6 weeks. We'll come back when yes. we have some other, something else for you
oh,
to yeah. do.
Where they're like, oh my God, we put together a great cast for this piece of garbage.
Yeah.
I think what it is that people are like, oh, it's a kids movie? Yeah, I'll do it. How much mm-hmm. am I getting paid? How many days I have to show up? Two? Great. I'll take the yeah. check. And no one thinks about it in any real sense. Like, it is a nothing movie. You didn't know Jesse Plemons was in it until I just told you. So it's mm-hmm. it goes under the radar. Not that Jesse Plemons, the child actor, was worried about exposure. I'm sure he wanted some. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's one of those weird things where, as somebody now who watches a ton of children's entertainment, yes. I am constantly surprised at who pops up, and not like as a cameo. Like, look, I've popped up in some children's programming myself, but a lot of the times because I have a close connection to it. But like, Larry David was in.
You're on ketamine, and it's just part of the experience. You're going to see yourself mirrored in some way.
I have to impress my children on some level. So mm-hmm. if I can get in one of these shows, but Larry David was on like Hannah Montana, just straight up. Coming into
sounds
a restaurant.
Sounds like something that originally Woody Allen was campaigning for. And then he was like, God damn it. God damn, I can't even eat my Gravlax. I'm so mad.
I'm going to show mad. Julie, Paul, what? Brett.
Yes.
Paul mentioned an actor, Robert Forster, the great, late, great Robert Forster. Late, I'm going to show this. I don't show it often.
Oh, Tom, I wish I was at my desk because I would also show you.
It's one of Robert Forster's letter openers.
He gave that to you after after you worked together. Did you get one too, Paul?
I did indeed.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
That is his thing.
He was just like, because he was on Divorce, the show Divorce, an episode I wrote, and he was just like, and funnily enough, I wrote it with him in mind as the thing before he was cast as Sarah Jessica Parker's father. I thought of him as he'd be perfect as her father and wrote it with him in mind. Everybody liked that idea of him. He got then he said yes. And then he shows up on set. Amazing guy. One of the nicest guys I ever met. He took me aside. He had like the call sheet and he was just like, can you help me go through this here and figure out who should get one of these letter openers? And I was like, because he gave me one. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. He goes, yeah, it's just a thing I do. I give people these letter openers. Like, he's like, it's just a little thing I do. And supposedly he had just like a storage locker with like thousands of them.
Because he works a lot. And when he came on NTSF, he did the same thing. And he was absolutely lovely. One of those guys who... You know, we're a bunch of, younger people. He didn't have to sit and have lunch with us. Mm-mm. Sat down, had lunch, told stories. And what I always respect about him to this day was when we had lunch with him, he had filmed the final episode of Breaking Bad, in mm-hmm. which he is in.
Yeah.
And when we sat down and just chatted about the show and his role in the show, he gave us no indication that he was coming back. Like, it was done. So I also just think I appreciate him on a level with just three or four actors.
Yes.
That he wasn't like, oh, stay tuned. Nothing coy, nothing like he had done it. And he kept his mouth shut. And I appreciated that. It was cool because it was a super big surprise to see him pop back up again.
Max Cherry. Good old Max Cherry.
Oh, Max Cherry.
Jack Brown.
Yeah.
One of the best. Well, you know, have I ever told you this story? I can't say names, but you might be able to guess it.
Rob Hubel.
You got it. And so I was on tour with the league, and we were going around the East Coast, and it was a pretty intense schedule because we were doing press and live shows. Mm-hmm. And one of the stops was in New York the night before we were in Boston. And my friend is like, hey, we're going out to this bar. Meet us at this bar. So I go to the bar and I get cornered by a manager, like a manager, a Hollywood manager, a successful, famous manager. And he goes, heard you were talking about me last night at the premiere of Bored to Death. And I go, I'm sorry, what? And he goes, yeah, I heard you were talking about me at the premiere of Bored to Death last night. Said I was too drunk. And I go, yeah, that was me. Right? Like I thought he was doing some bit. Like, I don't know. And it's weird, but I'm like, I know that I wasn't even there. I wasn't at the premiere of Bored to Death. And I'm like, right. And then, then I start to realize, oh, he is an alcoholic man. He is an alcoholic man. And we are in the middle of a deep dive into it. And so he starts to corner me. And at one point, like, literally puts his hands on either side of me, blocking me in like in a human prison, and is staring at me. He's like, apologize for what you did. And I was like, well, I mean, I was in Boston. He's like, you were there. I know you talked about me. Apologize. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And I apologized. I'm like, hey man, I'm sorry. Let's get out of this. Let's move forward in this moment. And it was one of the most uncomfortable situations to look someone in the sweaty, wide open eyes and know that there's no logic here. I am this person's enemy. And he thought that I had ruined him on some level. And it sent me back home to Google the Getty images where you find all the people who showed up to the premiere. And I believe there's a lot of bald men there, but I believe that the bald man that he confused me for is Todd Barry. I feel like Todd Barry might've been the person talking about him because I looked around and I was like, that might've been enough. Like he might've just heard a bald man was saying.
Have you talked about this to Todd?
No, I never told Todd this.
Try to get Todd to call in?
Does Todd remember?
Text Todd. I mean, when people act like that, at a certain point, it's. I always compare it to like, you have Charles Manson and you're an IHOP waitress and you're trying to argue with him, even though he ordered, you know, blueberry pancakes. Now he's saying he wants like steak and eggs. And are you really going to reason with him or are you just going to like... Either give him what he wants or just be like, it's on the house. Just get out of my, you know, how much are you going to engage with the person who's putting you in a human prison?
Yeah, it became like this thing. And I happened to stay in New York for like another day. And I saw him because he was also with his client who was also out doing press. And we bumped into each other two more times. Mm-hmm. And each time he gave me a look of like, you motherfucker.
Right. You were telling people I'm drunk.
You are. And by the way, anyone could tell. If you look at the images from that premiere.
Oh, really? You saw the Getty? You saw him on the red carpet?
Oh, there's some easy proof there. I don't think that anyone needed to like expose this man. It wasn't like, hey, this guy's doing coke in the bathroom. It was like, you know, that guy's a walking mess. Isn't he a walking mess?
There's actually like Odorama on some of the Getty images. If you pay an extra $25, you can smell the fumes.
Which is why I'm
gin.
Here on the show to promote my new social media service where you get to smell all the photos of your favorite celebrities.
Well, I did write them. I just did text them.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom.
And look, we have Paul Scheer on the show. This guy, Julie, he came up kind of when you came up, right? You both came up at UCB
He was before my time. He was George Washington, and I was like, who's the one that died after like having a cold? I don't know that much about history.
Zachary Taylor, who's
one of the presidents where you're like, who the fuck is that? There's a lot of them. There's like
the Gary of presidents.
Garrison.
Byron Allen is one of our, I think the fourth president, Byron
one
Allen.
One of the greats. And then there was Byron Allen Jr.
So what is the first you both remember of each other then? Let's go back in time to the Upright Citizens Brigade.
I can't remember a time where Paul Scheer was not in the front of my mind. Mm-hmm. I've always loved Paul Scheer as a human. I honestly don't know. It's like when people ask how Tom and I met. Well, no, I do remember how I met you, but I felt like I've known you for as much as a performer as a friend. Mm-hmm.
I think to me, what I remember about Julie was a wonderful sense of style, and you had a poise to you that not many people in that theater had, right? Aww. In the sense that you knew who you were and you knew what your voice was, and it was so clean and clear, and like, so you stuck out simply because you were very, very funny, but you also just like, you just carried yourself different than a bunch of people in graphic tees running around, you know, that theater. So I remember you like in that sense, and I can't think of a time being at UCB where you weren't there.
I can't think of a time similarly. And then also just from knowing you from Wallner and like all the people that we have in common that are true friends and not just comedy friends.
Yeah. And Tom, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but Tom was much more intimidating to me because I feel like the first couple of times I saw Tom, it was at the edge of a bar in McManus. I feel like I saw you, you know, like you look intimidating, Tom. Like for a younger guy coming in, it was like, here's Tom. He's a writer. He does this. He's like, you didn't want to mix it up with Tom because you felt like Tom was hanging out with a higher echelon of people. Like there were people that were above our sphere. You know, we were kind of in the back and they were at the bar. And I always feel like I saw Tom in that way. It took me a while to understand that you were a more approachable guy.
Well, yeah. Very nice of you to say. And I thought, I can remember the first time I saw you, Paul, was a show where it was like you were doing like an animal host thing with a pith helmet on. And
oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure some of these, one of those sketch shows, I'm sure. Or
it was you and, blanking on her name, Fineglass.
Was it Donna Fineglass?
Donna.
Oh my gosh, you're right. That was a show called Special Delivery. It was like a British children's show that we did. Yes.
That sounds cute.
Yeah. It was like a Pee-wee's Playhouse inspired show where I did terrible British accent, but it was very fun to do. I mean, there were so many. What I love about that theater in that time was all the big swings. Like, you know, there was like a real, like, just enjoyment to take, like, to be like, I don't care if this works. I like, you know, you try and you think it's going to work. But I mean, two shows that stick out to me that we did was once we did a show for one person. Mm-hmm. There was one man in the audience who was a student at UCB and maybe even a peer. I would say he was a peer. So it wasn't even like a real ticket. And we, in the middle of the show, we just kind of gave up. And we put a roll of masking tape on top of a prop baby's head. And we ran around that baby just chanting bellhop baby until he walked out of the theater, until it was like, it was to the point where it was like, well, now I have to leave. That was
the roll of masking tape kind of looks like the hats that bellhops wear.
Yep, that was about it.
I thought you were going to say that you wrapped the baby up in tape and at least that would be a little bit performance art.
Nope.
Sort of Karen Finley active.
Just dropped a roll of, we put the baby on a chair, put the tape on his head that looked like a little bellhop hat and just said bellhop baby and then just over just never stop saying bellhop.
Then you have
baby.
Articles being like, why aren't UCB performers paid? And you're like,
there was a couple of harsh moments. I remember that we did do a very successful show that was based on a Matt Besser show that he did in Chicago called The Real Real World, which is a parody of The Real World. That was a show that ran many a weekend for ages. It's a Saturday night, like 10 o'clock show. It was a very popular, sold out show. And I believe Jack Handy came to that show. Like, he's like, oh, what is UCB all about? And the only thing I remember hearing about that was he walked out and said, never again. So he like a never. Yeah. Like, that,
these thoughts aren't deep enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jack Handy showed it. Like the only way I'd recognize him would be like if he was like the New Yorker guy, like if he had a monocle and he was like looking at a butterfly, like if he waltzed in like that, that's who I would think he was.
I didn't even know that he was there. I just knew that it was told to us that, you know, one of the best or historic SNL writers was so upset that he left. He left in disregard of the theater. And yeah, so there was a lot of those shows. I mean, what was your worst show that you did, Julia? Do you remember?
I'm not a great improviser, and I remember just like coming out and just like dancing like at one point because I was just on the back line for way too long, and I didn't want to say anything, so I just started dancing, and then other people came in and like tried to help, but it only made it worse. And and then I remember like I was on a Harold team, but I got kicked off of it pretty quickly because I was not ruining scenes, but I just didn't like I didn't really like the other people on it. So I broke into one scene. I remember that was may have been going however it was going, but I was just like these two men are wearing this, they both have a mustache that they're sharing, and then I got in trouble for that. Because they were like, you're not building on it. Like, you're coming in and making it something else. And I was like, I was bored.
I don't even know how I got.
I was so bad at it. I was so bad at Harold's.
Ooh, Harold is not a form that's fun for anyone to watch, but yet we really reveled in it. And it's really like, it's like watching people bowl with like the things that you can't get gutter balls up. Like, it's like basically
barricade things that get put up.
It's not interesting. It's just sort of like this. It's an
interesting metaphor, because for me it was all gutter balls. Like, I could never, I never did anything.
I don't think it was always like getting a strike. It just felt like it was so like. I don't know. It was
like watching stupid babies in a piddle pool.
Yeah, it's like it didn't feel like it was alive, or sometimes it did. I don't know. I just never felt like that form had a life. But I did get assigned to being on the Herald committee, which was like we were a group that would watch auditions.
You're basically the Supreme Court. You were the Sonia Sotomayor of the Herald committee.
Mm-hmm. And they brought me in, and then I soon realized the only reason why they brought me in was so I could be the person who had to call everybody and fire them from their Herald teams. And those were the worst.
Let's do one.
Yeah,
right. Hello.
Hey, Julie. Hey, what's going on? It's Paul Scheer. How are you?
Oh, hi. What's going on?
Not much. Look, I just wanted to talk.
Are you having a good weekend? It's like keep small talking you into keep going. Yeah.
We're just kind of doing
Did
some
I
different
make
stuff.
It?
Well, the worst was like, so when you had to make the make a call, so you at least knew, like, I'm calling you cold. Like, you're on a Herald team. You don't even know. Like, this is like an assassin popping up. Like, you don't know you're on probation. Boy. You don't know anything is about to happen. So like, why is Paul calling me? I'm like, you know, I'm on this Herald team committee, and we've been watching the shows, and I just feel like the group has been a little bit, I don't know. I just feel like it's not gelling exactly.
This is the terrible. This is what they should have paid you for, not performers.
And it was awful because these are people that were also my peers, and I had to be like, it's not working that great. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to make some changes on the team. And right now we're going to take you off that team, and we're going to be building new teams soon. But right now we're going to pull you off that team and kind of find a better. And it was like,
you're fired from your volunteer job.
Yes. You can't perform for free anymore. So enjoy it.
So what is the first time the two of you both, and I'm not going down memory lane here, but it's interesting to just think about those early days when you're doing it just for the spirit of it, certain things doing it for the spirit of it. When you first realize it's just like, well, maybe I actually could do more of this. Like, maybe this is a thing. I can go for it. When's the first time you had that kind of hope?
Oh, wow.
That like you could, like, I can make a go at this professionally.
I kind of like didn't have any job prospects after 9/11. Like, I started, and I'm not to like make this into like something depressing, but like I got fired from a job that I started on like September 10th, 2011. Mm-hmm. And then like I got fired like 3 weeks later, and I kind of like couldn't hold a job for
2001.
Yeah, 2001. And I kind of couldn't hold a job for like a few years. So I was really just doing UCB like and as much comedy as I could, because there was just sort of nothing really. I don't know. Maybe there were jobs that I weren't that I wasn't like good for, but it just kind of took over my life. I don't know. That was sort of a, yeah. Like it kind of, in retrospect, you're like, yeah, it was sort of like a recession, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were in a weird, there was a weird time. Like I feel like after 9/11 and the book, Meet Me in the Bathroom is kind of a great book if you want to know what it was like to be in cool UCB. Like I feel like I read that book and I was like, oh, this is what everyone else was doing. But we were kind of doing like the junior varsity version of this, the less cool version of it. But it was like, oh, people are going out to Brooklyn. And there were this this idea of like, we're like, not a like, fuck it energy, but there was an energy that was like, whatever now, like who knows, we could all die. Like, because I remember at like a certain point right after 9/11, I was like, oh, only ride buses because I think they found bombs in the subway and, you know, all this like, you know, crazy stuff, all these rumors that were going around that weren't even like, the internet wasn't the way it was now. And it was, you a lot more, you're hearing things, you know?
Yeah.
But I think for me, when I realized that it could be something, I was performing a lot. I was performing five nights a week, but it didn't feel like it was, like it could be anything. It just felt like this is what you do. And we were getting to do these Conan bits that kind of paid the rent and you would work for free. And I left a job that was paying to go do this, which was like a big leap. And I'm glad that I did, but it was also nerve wracking. And then there was an SNL showcase. And I had never had SNL on my radar. It was something I was like, well, that is not something that would happen for me. You know, that's Groundlings and that's Second City, but they came to the showcase night and they had everybody at the theater kind of did a 2 minute long bit. And I did my 2 minute long bit. And I was the only one to get an SNL audition out of that.
Oh, wow.
That night. And it was like, wait, what? Like that was to me like a moment where like all of a sudden I'm signing this 7-year deal because you have to sign a 7-year contract before you could even audition for SNL, you know? And it was like this moment where I was like, oh wait, this is actually could be something. And then that started like a 3-year process of auditioning for SNL, like every year, it never went anywhere, but it was a great, I'm very happy I didn't get SNL. I would have been thrilled to get SNL, but it was it was like, that was the moment where I was like, oh,
Paul, like, could it's you me. Do this? It's me, Lauren. We're going in a different direction. Those calls were a lot shorter.
By the way, can I tell you?
I don't want to interrupt. I'm being told somebody's on the hotline.
Oh, boy.
This is very exciting. We had an issue to resolve, an issue of was Todd Barry the person that was mistaken for Paul Scheer? And actually, Todd Barry is on the line right now to resolve this. So we're going to bring him on right now. Here he comes.
Hi, Todd.
Hello, everyone.
Todd, I was telling this story, and I don't even think that you even know what actually happened. I was in New York a handful of years ago, and I was cornered. I haven't been mentioning this person's name, so if you know the person's name, maybe we keep it quiet. But I was cornered by this manager late at night, and he was like, I know what you did. You were talking about me last night. You were telling everyone I was drunk, and I was like, and at first I was playing along because I thought he was doing a bit. I soon realized it wasn't a bit. And he was like, you were at the Bored to Death premiere last night and you were telling everyone I was drunk. And I wasn't there. I wasn't even in town. I couldn't have been there. And I went home and I started searching through the Getty images of that night. And I thought the only person that it could have been was you, because there were some bald men there. But I feel like for this person who was so drunk, like it was maybe an easier confusion at a Bored to Death premiere. Do you have any recollection of talking shit? Like, yeah.
I feel like detective, not in your future. That's kind of a reach, don't you think? Although I was on Bored to Death. I don't remember if I went to the premiere, but
you were
I
there.
Couldn't imagine.
You were there.
Oh, I was there.
There's pictures of you with this person.
I couldn't imagine like just spreading like someone. That just doesn't seem like the kind of hot gossip I would spread that someone was drunk at a party.
And that's this is what I wanted to say. I, the character of Todd Barry, I'm not going to stand for this.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
This is why he got you on the phone, Todd, is he wanted you to hear him do what he's about to do.
What's he about to do?
I'm defending you. I'm defending you. Todd Barry is a
okay.
He's a class act and a good guy.
As funny as he is, he's twice as decent as funny as he is. He's one of the funniest people ever. So then you can only imagine how decent he is.
I think Paul should talk about the time I ran into him at Bed Bath & Beyond. That seems like a more interesting story.
What was that like?
We got I think it was in the dental aisle, and I just turned to my left, and there's Paul Scheer. I was like, holy shit.
Now, Todd, you have some upcoming tour dates.
Oh, wow. I get to do plugs.
We're going right to the plug.
Oh, no. Wow. I want you to feel taken care of.
This is what Tom likes to call a bread sandwich. Two pieces of bread, and there's nothing in between.
I thought there was nothing in this for me, and now I'm realizing.
Now you got a chance to really plug it up. And by the way, Todd, what I was going to say to you was, just so you know, I wasn't saying that you were spreading a rumor.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. It was just a funny, to me, it was funny that this gentleman who was so clearly drunk,
was an alcoholic,
was worried that someone had outed him. When if you look at the pictures from the Getty premiere, he's outed himself just by showing up.
Were the mysteries on board to death this boring? Was that an episode? Is that why it's not on the air anymore?
And also, I just want to say, I look at these Getty images. I pay every time I look at a Getty
image.
What are you talking about?
You pay just to look at them? Just to look at them?
You don't Instagram the watermark one?
I pay. $3,500. You want me to put that picture
up?
Isn't there like an Instagram special? You can't just do like a... There isn't? You have to go all the way,
$3,500? I've never... I'm just always excited to be even on there.
Well, you know where you're going to be on there, Todd, is the stages of the United States.
Whoa.
Oh, okay. We're doing this.
I want the word out. I want the word out. It's time for America to laugh again.
I'll be in Philadelphia. I'll just name the cities, and then people can go to my website. Philadelphia, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Antioch, which I've never been to.
Nice. Why did you pick it? Why did you pick Antioch this time?
I didn't pick it. It was just offered to me.
All right, good.
Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, I didn't go. I've always been curious about Antioch. But I have a lot of dates on the spot. I can't remember them, weirdly. But
no, well, people can go to toddberry.com and get all the details.
Which podcast is this? Best Show or is this something else?
This double threat.
It's me and Tom.
Holy shit. That's the definition of a double threat, man.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have you on as a proper guest soon.
Okay. I'll bring my cat.
I wish you would. I've seen pictures of your cat. It's the best cat in the world.
It's pretty cute. Don't you have one?
I do, but I think yours might be cuter than mine.
That's right. All right. Well, Todd, we're sorry for the mistaken identity.
Sorry, Todd. I will never spread this again. Sorry, it was my fault. Maybe it was somebody else. I know it was somebody else now. I know it was.
And, you know, to be fair, maybe I did say someone was drunk, but it wasn't like, you're not going to believe this. This guy was drunk.
Yeah, no. I don't think it was positioned like you were going around like, tipping the gossip pages about it. I think you might, like, the way it was positioned to me was that you just were saying like, oh, geez, this guy's a little drunk.
But also in this scenario, a manager doesn't know enough about comedy to know the difference between me and you.
Well, that would be, yeah. I mean, by the way, he didn't even believe that I wasn't there. So that was the thing that I was having a real hard time with.
Let's get this guy on the phone. Let's get this guy on the phone.
I have proof. I have his in Boston.
All right, everyone. All right, Todd, I might think goodbye now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye, Todd.
See you guys.
Bye, Todd. Thank you, Todd.
Bye.
Bye, Tom. See you, Paul.
Bye. See you later. Now I feel bad. I feel
I think it was him. I just was. I'm playing every side on this one.
I've got a couple other suspects if you want. I'm looking at these bored to death pictures.
If it wasn't, yeah. Todd, share the screen.
Okay.
I hope you're paying for these.
Well,
Brett.
I mean, here's
how much
the other
money
thing.
Have you spent?
The truth is, Bored to Death has a great cavalcade of bald men. Because we
Jonathan
also,
Ames is bald.
Well, that's who I was thinking about. Jonathan Ames. David Cross is there. There are a lot of men here that could fit the bill. Maybe it is Jonathan Ames. Maybe it's, you know, I got to ask him next time I see him too. This is not the premiere though. This is not the one.
Okay.
But I know that all the suspects are the same. I'm trying to
find.
Maybe
it was Jason Schwartzman upside down.
Now we're talking about
you're
it.
You're confusing now. Paul for Jason Schwartzman's cute like little tippy toes.
One of those heads where it's smiling when you look at one way, then you turn it the other way and they're frowning. Now, Paul, you recently took a trip down Sesame Street, from what I hear.
Really?
I was on Sesame Street. Yeah, I was on.
That's so cool.
All right. So I had a very interesting experience on Sesame Street because I did my pre-interview with Sesame Street. And
do you have any stories that Elmo can ask you about? It's a pre-interview. Just like, all right. So Grover wants to plug. What does Grover need to plug?
They were like, you know, what do you remember about Sesame Street? And we were talking. And, you know, and I'm not thinking much of it because I'm there to, like, it was part of a big anniversary special. So I'm like, I love Sesame Street. And, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't teaching anything. I wasn't doing a dance. I wasn't doing anything major. But they brought me there for a reason. And, you know, they're like, what was your favorite character? And I start telling the story about my favorite character. And I can see the director is like, huh, you know what? How about another favorite character?
Oh no!
And I was like, "Oh, did I not like nail this?" And I was like, "I tell another story about a favorite character," and he's like, ah. "You know." And I know these moments where I'm like, "I know I'm fucking up. Like, I'm not giving you what you want," and I'm like, "I'm trying to be like, what do you want? How could I be messing up on Sesame Street?" And he's like, "You know, remember the pre-interview what you said?" And I was like, "Oh yeah," I said, "I mentioned this one thing, but I didn't think you wanted that." He's like, "No, say that." Mm-hmm. So they cue me again. And in my pre-interview, I talked about this character and his name was, hold on one second. I got to make sure I give it. His name was Roosevelt Franklin. And he was on the Muppet Show, early on in the Muppet Show. And it was a character that I really loved. And I edited myself on air because I was like, no one knows who Roosevelt Franklin is. Like, that's not a Muppet that anyone is going to be like, yes, I remember that too. Roosevelt Franklin. But what they had done was they had taken Roosevelt Franklin out of storage.
Oh, retirement.
And so as I'm talking, Roosevelt Franklin is creeping up behind me and I didn't see it. So this puppeteer the entire time was like waiting behind a wall with his Roosevelt Franklin on as I'm like going, Snuffleupagus, Cookie Monster. And like, no. And so he was waiting for me to say,
oh my God,
Roosevelt Franklin. And then as I said it, I still don't know it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll talk about Roosevelt Franklin and start talking about it. And then all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I feel this presence and I look and it's Roosevelt Franklin. And it was the best moment of all time. It was amazing.
And then just by reflex, you reach for your gun.
And then I did shoot him. Yeah. And that was, you know, and look, I am armed because
don't sneak up on me. That's my only.
Yeah.
I'm trained to shoot.
Yes, imagine if you had said Snuffleupagus in your pre-interview thing, and then there's six guys in a Snuffleupagus costume waiting around the corner. When's this guy going to finally mention Snuffleupagus? It's getting hot in here.
I mean, I felt so badly for it because I was trying to do them a solid. I didn't feel like I was. It was a moment, but it
can
was
I
one of the
what
best.
Roosevelt Franklin looks like, please.
Yeah, Roosevelt Franklin's like a little bit of a. Like a purpley human Muppet.
Humanoid.
Yeah.
You know who I like is that man who always eats at Grover's restaurant. I know.
Hey, Grover is a restaurant?
That look like that. Yeah, well, Grover's.
Yeah.
That's your favorite Muppet?
It was a Muppet that like really connected to me as a kid. Like, I just like.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Like, he looks like, doesn't he look like the Sonic Youth of Muppets on that photo?
Like,
yeah.
He looks like he's out to.
Yeah, he's like a real, like he's a definitely obscure
he's
one.
He's about
like,
to perform side A of Goo.
And, yeah. And you know, he was more of like an inner city Muppet. Like he had like
yes,
a little bit of.
He's cool.
Yeah, and it was cool. And I just like, for whatever reason, Roosevelt Franklin was like, I loved him. And he had been taken
That's
out
awesome.
Of commission.
He's your pal.
He's my
pal. But it's nice you picked a Muppet that wasn't one of the mainstays, then that's what resonated with you was a slightly a unique, maybe not the most crowd pleasing, obvious Muppet.
So that was a big.
Brett,
I mean,
will you look up the guy who was a customer of Grover's restaurant, who was always getting fucked over with like soup, or just Grover was always doing bits, yeah, and sure. That guy just wanted to eat.
That wasn't Gordon.
Is that his name? Gordon? I don't know if he ever had a name. He was just sometimes my friend shows me photos on Scruff and I'm like, oh, that looks like the guy that eats at Grover's restaurant all the time.
What's mm-hmm. Scruff?
That guy.
I love that guy.
It's a gay dating app.
That's Mr. Spacely from
Yes, that's from Mr. Spacely. That's the Muppet Spacely, basically.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is a great. I mean, if you guys could see what we are looking at, you would absolutely.
You'd be in heaven above. Yeah.
And you will be able to see it if you go to Double Threat Pod on Twitter.
Well,
and
what's Grover doing in that one outfit? What's he working at Wiener Schnitzel with that outfit?
Who is
Grover? Look at that! Look at that!
What's going on there? They sold out. Oh, Juice! He's working at so he's in L.A.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well.
You know,
you've gotten to do so many things like that, Paul. You're hanging out with NBA players now. You're hanging out with the Muppets.
I'm working with Serge Ibaka, NBA champion, on his brand new cooking and interview show called How Hungry Are You, which he's done a couple of seasons of. And that has been a trip because, we're interviewing
ask what it's like to watch. And because like I know you're in some children's programming,
yeah.
But then having children and watching children's programming, like, has there anything that's occurred to you revisiting like Disney movies that is disconcert? Like, have you dealt with Pinocchio? Yeah, have you reckoned with Pinocchio since having children? Have you exposed them to that the horrors of Pinocchio?
You know, we have not gone down that road. Thankfully, my 7-year-old son is obsessed with basketball. Mm-hmm. All we do is talk about who's the tallest, who has the most blocks, who's the cutest. My son is very obsessed with basketball players being cute.
That is so cool.
He is like, for a while it was like, who's cuter, Bol Bol or Jamal Murray?
Bubble.
Does your son like any of the Atlanta Hawks?
Clint Capella is his favorite, and Kevin Herter, and So he really is like in it, and so we do a lot of basketball watching. Shaq and the Fool is a big thing for us, and then my other son. And then all the basketball movies.
Julie, Shaq and a Fool is a segment that Shaq does on the post show things where he puts together like a top five of like players bouncing the ball off their head or passing it to nobody.
Hey, good pass.
Scordellis is written for Shaq, I think. Yeah. More than like at this point, more than comedians.
By the way, not to keep on.
Paul, how are you? You like Papa Shaq, John's? You like the general?
By the way, I had told the story about Bored to Death to a friend on a group chat, and I had gone deep into the Bored to Death pictures. And I've forgotten a whole slew of people that it could have been. Can I just tell you who?
Because
I have all the pictures.
Maybe
now.
I'll have some of their numbers.
Okay, so here we go, and this is going to really open it up for you. And I think what we came in the group chat to the conclusion of. Well, I'll tell you. I'll reveal it to you later. But here are the bald men at that premiere. Scott Adsit. At that premiere.
Yeah, yeah.
Moby.
Bald to death.
Yes. I mean, this is a heavily bald show.
Yeah.
That one was like contact for me. It was time released, but it got me, Julie.
Hold on. I'm scrolling back up to the picture. Those are two good ones. I felt like I inherited it. Hold on. it was also David Cross was at that premiere.
It was a veritable who's bald in comedy.
Stanley Tucci at that premiere.
Are you kidding?
This guy
has become
at this premiere. I don't even know who he is, but he looks
Tucci, no?
That's not Tucci. He looks like even you're confusing him for Tucci.
What does Getty say? Getty always knows.
I didn't save the Getty on this guy. And yeah, you know, so there was a lot of bald men at the premiere there. So like, yeah, it's Tucci, Barry, Cross, Moby.
That last one was John Ventimiglia from Sopranos was that last
wow.
one. The guy who owns the restaurant.
Artie Bucco.
Thank you very much.
Bucco, yeah.
The great Artie
Bucco. Artie Bucco's wife. And Jonathan Ames himself.
And that's the one. Yeah. That's the guy.
Oh, I knew who that's. Yeah, I knew exactly who it was the second you started telling the story.
We know.
I just needed to know it wasn't that person.
Yeah, I know. I call him Mr. Waterproof. Not waterproof. What's the
bulletproof?
Bulletproof.
Teflon?
Yeah.
Off the side of a duck's
Water off a duck's back.
Yeah. Ducky.
Brett, actually, Paul, maybe you might work on. Brett is actually doing an NBA podcast, a cooking podcast. It's called Glaze with Baze, and it's a show with Kent Bazemore where he works on glazes and rubs and Atlanta Hawks Hall of Fame. Is he retired? Is his number retired yet for the Atlanta Hawks?
I think they're going to put in the rafters. They haven't. They're clearing some space for it. I think they're going to take Pistol
Pete
off the
rafters. There's more of a chance of him living in the rafters. Yeah. There's more of a chance of him being like the Phantom of the Opera living in the than his number getting up there.
Phantom of the rafters.
Yeah. He'll put his phone number in the rafters looking for work.
Brett likes to cook, and his specialty is glazes and rubs for fresh fish.
Look, yes. I appreciate that kind of thing. I got into a lot of rubs for fish over the quarantine, and I appreciate a person who makes their own rubs.
That's good. You like a savory, or you like kind of a sweeter, like a citrusy rub? What's your preference?
You know, I think if I'm going citrus,
I think the two of us should sign off right now.
Yeah, we should just let this be.
Should we just go? How about, you know what? Let's mute. Hold on, I'm gonna mute myself.
I like a savory. I like some spice there. I want some spice in that rub. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on the fish too. I mean,
of course. What can handle the fish?
And, exactly.
You know, to me, it's also about like, I'm not looking for the blackened. I'm not looking for that kind of a taste always. Not that I'm not a fan of it, but I'm looking for something in between.
Yeah.
That blackened.
Yeah, you're walking a real tightrope with the blackened stuff too, because if you don't, I mean, that can go south in a hurry when you're doing
very quick. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And then sometimes when I feel like it's a sweeter kind of a saucy rub, like something that feels like a duck sauce.
Yeah, you're getting more into glaze territory there. Yeah.
The glaze is tricky for me. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming to the fish, in my opinion.
For sure. Yeah, some fish can't sustain it, you know. They get all soaked up in it, and then you just got like a big old wet fish that you're trying to do
something
with.
I'm eating glaze.
Yeah, you're eating glaze, you're not eating fish. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like, you know, the reason why, you know, carnivals have been so successful is because they've perfected the candy apple. You know, I don't want to have that candy apple being goopy. I need that to be
all right, I just unmuted. The reason why carnivals have been successful?
Yeah, that's the reason why carnivals have been successful.
I have to stop this right now.
The subtlety of the caramel
the
getting
reasons
put on
why
a,
carnivals have been successful.
You gotta get your candy apples there because they're not they're gonna
and no it has to do with pickpocketing people. It has to do with carnies having some fresh marks so that they can leave town the next day and you're none the wiser.
Julie, it's like I always said, if you go to a thing and you see where the rides are plugged in, if you can see literally the outlet that the rides are plugged in, run.
That means
they can be out of town in 15 minutes.
Yeah, you'll have a candy apple in your mouth. You'll be roasted like a pig.
Yeah,
I don't like those.
Be none the wiser.
I don't like those carnivals that come to town. There's a carnival that comes to my town, and it parks down at the local park. And
is it one of those ones where like people with tattoos like hammer nails inside their noses, like in the 90s?
No, I wish it was. Show. It's much more of like a one of these carnivals that's like with a Gravitron from 1982 that's still kind of running. You know, it's still playing like Beastie Boys has got to fight for your right to party. It had a track listing that was ready to go back then that hasn't really changed.
Yeah. You hear like Kevin Seal in between tracks introducing the next video. And what do you guys like to watch as a family besides Space Jam 2?
What's something that the whole family can agree upon?
Okay, well, I'll tell you, we have loved this show. And,
White Lotus.
Called White Lotus. The kids love it. Well, okay, the one show that unites, they love, I mean, it's what they love about it is the themes thematically. Yeah. They love it. Yeah. You know, they, execution
colonialism.
Wise,
and,
yes.
Yeah. They really like love the guy that runs the hotel. They just can't get enough like of his him. Antics.
Well, yeah, I'll imagine like Basil Fawlty, but like not fun or funny.
Yeah.
I will tell you that this is what my five-year-old said last night, and it might give you a clue of what's the uniting television show. I said, what do you want to be for Halloween, Sammy? And he said, Tom Bergeron.
Oh, my God. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's so great.
So,
and watch Sammy's going to change his mind between now and Halloween, but his parents are like, no, that's the funny bit, and we're
have to keep it. We got to keep Tom Bergeron in the mix. In. Yeah. So AFV is our America's Funniest Home Videos.
Sure.
is the big unifier in our house. That's the
biggest
one.
Unifier. It transcends language. It mm-hmm. transcends age, race.
I gotta say, it's very funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't agree on much as a full unit. Like June is trying to get the boys to watch like the new Babysitter's Club. Gus and I are watching like NBA finals from 2012. Literally our car, we have a DVD player in the car, and the kids both have their own DVD files. And I've bought every NBA championship DVD in the car. So we're watching Allen Iverson, The Answer. We're watching 1975 Lakers. We're watching all that sort of stuff. And then, Sammy probably has the best taste.
In other words, I should start a book club with June. This is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
No, but I should probably reach out and the two of us.
I want Julie. I want you in the back seat. I want you in the back seat watching the 2004 NBA Finals with Paul's kids, reviewing Pistons versus Lakers, and I need you to tell me what went wrong.
My son has dropped some bombs on me, and he said these refs are corrupt after he watched the Dallas Mavericks the first time Mark Cuban brought them to, I think it was like the 2006 or like it was he's got a lot of opinions about stuff, a lot of strong mm-hmm. opinions, so about who's good, who's bad. And not, they don't always add up to.
Are they too young for your favorite movies when you were a kid yet? Like
no.
Back to the Future? Or
we
like,
just did Goonies, and it was a giant hit. And they love E.T. They love Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, Pee-wee's the best.
They both have a good sense of humor. And then
the clown stuff in Pee-wee wasn't too
terrifying.
Much.
Terrifying.
More terrified in Goonies, but it was, Goonies was scaring them, straight up scaring them. Pee-wee's made them laugh.
Okay.
But dream sequences are rough, though, in Pee-wee.
The one when the surgeon pulls down his mask.
Yeah. but let me tell you this. When you have Anne Ramsey in Goonies telling a child that she's going to put his hand in a blender, that's a lot more gutter. The kids feel it harder. I will say that the other thing.
You should show them Throw Mama from the Train. I rewatched that the other night.
Is it good? Again,
I think so. I mean, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's good, but it was over very quickly. I remember thinking it was extremely short.
These movies are so great back then. Very quick.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're out of there 90 minutes or less. It was
get done. Yeah.
Danny DeVito and Barry Sonnenfeld doing some very hammy camera work, and Billy Crystal, also oddly enough, being a little hammy.
Can I tell you, I cried in that movie when I was a kid. It really emotionally affected me because there's a moment in that movie. I remember it so clearly where Danny DeVito talks about holding on to all the movie stubs that he saw with his dad like that. Yeah. And
well, there were these coin collections.
Oh, coin collection. That's what it was.
Changed back from. Yeah, it's sweet.
Yeah. So that was like a very sweet moment for me.
Julie, would you consider leaving a message for Paul's kids as Mama and Ramsey?
Yeah. Yeah.
That he can play later for them?
Just send this as an audio file. Okay.
All right.
What their names are Sammy and what?
Sam and Gus.
Sammy, Gus, it's me, Aunt Ramsey. Listen to your father. He's nice. Goodbye.
Oh my God, I love it, and I'll give that to them immediately. I will tell you the one movie that I learned was a terrible choice, and I did a lot of aggressive. Fast forwarding was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Forgot. Mm-hmm. That movie is like, first of all, ending. It's problematic on so many levels. But let me just go back and just, like, we can agree that the movie is problematic. But I now want to go above that and say, what's even more of a problem with that movie is, like, Jim Carrey is like, yeah, I want to make a movie where I'm like a pet detective, but, you know, I fuck. I fuck a lot, and people like to fuck me. Like it's like, wait, hold on. Like, that to me is the most disturbing part of it. Like, this movie that is so child-specific is like, and I'm going to have, like, three sex scenes. Like, three long sex scenes in this movie.
Oh, my God. I didn't, like, know that.
The opening sequence ends with a blowjob. The then he has, like, a long sex scene, like a rhythmic fucking scene. Sorry, I'm saying fuck so many times. To Courtney Cox in, like, in the jungle, the, like, wild. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like just pound. It's like, it is. And then not this. And then yes. And then all.
What's the third one? No, wait, finish. Give me the rule of three.
Well, the third one is kind of like this, like Sean Young kind of mounts him on a desk, and there's like a very awkward moment there. But basically, like, women need to fuck Ace Ventura. Like, that, like, women are, oh, like, it's not like, oh, this man's a goof, this man's a fool, this man's an idiot. It's like, no. And then I put on Dumb and Dumber, and I watched that, and the same thing, like, women need to have sex with these men. And I was like, is this, like, some weird thing where they're like, I know I'm doing a kids movie, back to the kids movie, like, but I need to maintain my virility here. I need to make sure that they know that I am still,
Do you think that at the time they thought they were kids movies, or did they just think that they were, like, raunchy, goofy comedies? They didn't even think about kids.
I mean, Dumb and Dumber is a different thing, but Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
It should be a children's movie. By all means, it should be, like, a cartoon.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, like, I don't think you're going to treat that one as an adult film.
Like,
yeah, I don't
at no
think
point
that it,
does, like, dastardly, like, be like, just a minute, Muttley, and then go, like, fuck someone.
It is, that movie has so many issues. And then I will say, just to, you know, to throw props there, it is a very funny performance that I've made my kids laugh in a way that I've never seen. By JC. I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old who fell off the couch laughing just at, you know, talking out of your butt. They've never seen anything like that. Sure. Like that, you know, that.
Yeah, but what's your excuse?
Children. I'm not saying that it is one of my favorite comedy performances. I enjoyed watching them enjoy it.
Sure.
That to me, I was like, and you know, they're, you know, like, they're, yeah, there's, it, I'm well, kind
what's,
of fascinated.
What's going one that bombed hard from your past that you're just like, oh, this is one someday I'll might show my kids this movie, and then it just did not land with them. And we were you don't get it.
You know, I'm trying to think, because I'm very judicious about what I show them and when I show it to them. I'm not a cool parent. I'm not like, you know, I've talked to parents who are like, oh, I show my kids Jaws.
I don't even mean like that. I mean, just like, you're like, this is a good kids movie, and they just didn't respond.
Or I liked this when I was little. And
That's what I'm
that's
thinking
your
about.
Problem, like, Dad.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that has not really like, worked. And I had I remember, gosh, it, like,
Gran Torino.
Gran Torino. They actually like that. They like
what's that one where that guy's on a lawnmower for 2 hours? And David Lynch is like, this will be a good idea.
Straight story.
What's my David Lynch impression again? How does it go? Tom, do it.
That's
an interesting idea. Like something like that.
Mm-hmm. I will say that I think I'm too precious. I don't feel like I have exposed them to something that has failed yet. I feel like I'm getting into that territory now. Mm-hmm. Like Goonies was a big swing, I wasn't sure. And
Men in Black? Can they see Men in Black?
No, not yet, but they should I think they can, because I just rewatch it. Like, there are movies that I'm ready to start to show them, but I'm also like, they haven't seen much either. Like, they haven't, like, we... Yeah, you know, like, now that Gus is all about NBA, it's very hard to get him.
Yeah, it's going
to
be hard.
You show him Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems he likes because he loves Garnett.
Show him Uncut Gems.
And just, also, what's up with Brett's lighting back there? What is he, in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie all of a sudden? Look at that, Julie.
I got to have a project to work on in these episodes.
Seems
you know, I've just been tweaking it.
It seems like he's at a piano, doesn't it? It seems like he's an accompanist.
Yeah.
And he's about to be like,
You know, movie I bet your kids that a kid would think just straight up sucked would be like Tron.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah,
they'd
yeah.
just be like, that's boring.
Well, you see, this is what I think I have a good like understanding of where I know there's a part of me is like, I love The Explorers, this movie when I was a kid about kids going into outer space building mm-hmm. a rocket ship, and I'm like, that is not going to hold up. I know it's not going to hold up, and I'm not going to even subject myself to the failure of that. Right. Like, I right now just have a pretty solid. Keep it as a
happy memory.
Yes.
One of the most frustrating movies ever made, Explorers. Ugh. The ending is like one of the most.
What is it? Kids go to space?
It's like a Joe Dante movie, right?
Yeah. It's like the kids like go in the backyard and build their own like spaceship, like kind of a thing.
What about Mac and Me? Have you showed them Mac and Me?
No, because that's not good quality. You know, and not after E.T.
Oh,
I
mean, look at me. That's not good quality. Oh,
but you know what? Like, I mean, look, I'm watching a lot. I mean, look, I've watched Paw Patrol the movie now 4 times mm-hmm. since Friday.
Paw Patrol was canceled after Defund the Police. I thought they defunded the Paw Patrol. Wow, crazy?
Tell it to the box office. That movie came in number 2 after Free Guy this weekend.
Right.
Yeah, we got that Paramount Plus. We're rocking out on Paw Patrol, the movie, which opens in a crazy way. It's like a truck driver is driving through Adventure Bay, and he swerves to miss a turtle and drives his truck off a bridge. And the opening sequence is like this giant 16-wheeler hanging off a bridge. I was like, this is like... It's funny that these are the images that we're using to open up a kid's movie, like a man dangling from his death, like, you know, like that kind of a thing. So, yeah.
Well, don't you think that people are just like, what's not boring?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I guess we got to get them
inside for like 2 years. Yeah. Everything's on a screen. Right.
I got the Paw Patrol script. Truck crashes in it. Opening scene, a truck drives off a bridge.
I will tell you the show that I hate that my youngest son watches, and it's called Ryan's World, and it's a young boy who started as like an unboxing toy show, and now the parents are involved, or the parents have always been involved, and it is like,
and the parents are like, they like want to be on camera. They're into
Julie,
it.
Like if you are ever getting high one night, just type in Ryan's World to YouTube. There's about 9 million videos of it. Mm-hmm. We have bed sheets of Ryan. We have this is just a boy who makes his own toys.
Could
a
watch
whole section.
One of those, Brett? Could you find one?
Yeah, find a Ryan's World.
His parents have like started to steal the spotlight.
Oh, they're in it. And since they started, he has 2 twin sisters that are also in it. It's so janky. It's like, it's aggressively janky.
This has 30.4 million subscribers.
Oh, great.
So
yep, great.
Like one of these videos is like a million or 700,000 views or whatever. Okay.
So like maybe watch this one with the mom, the one with the mommy.
Ryan found magical glasses and trick mommy.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's appealed like this kid playing with toys that you wish you had, and he's talking.
Welcome to Ryan's World.
This is the soundtrack of your life.
What was that noise? Anybody here?
Wait until the parents get in.
Whoa!
Is dad behind the camera?
Found some sunglasses.
Dad should have gotten another take.
Really? Oh, hi, Ryan. You hungry?
Oh, I can't stand. I can't stand it.
Or a sandwich, whatever you like.
It's like they live.
It is like they live.
Yeah. Kids got these sunglasses.
It's kind of like the Twilight Zone movie. Tragedy.
What's up, fruits? Hey, you cannot put any games to help around the house more. Ryan, you can also dust the TV. Come on, Ryan, you gotta help out more, right?
Oh my God. Nice. We gotta recast this mother.
Combo?
Yeah, we're gonna see some mommies today.
You look like you need to go take a nap.
No, I don't.
So then there's this piece of shit panda bear who's animated and he's a gamer.
I'm gonna go tell mommy, and she is gonna.
I'm gonna recast Ryan. I think I'm ready to recast Ryan.
Ryan had his own show on Nickelodeon, and the parents were also the stars of that as well. Yeah, these glasses work in a weird way because when they are like the They Live glasses, but when he puts them on, people are mean, but when he takes them off, people are nice. It should be the opposite way.
Yeah, like, exactly. Because then there's no conflict with like, well, then just throw the glasses away.
Yeah, we don't need these glasses. Yeah, we don't need to see the mean world.
Knucklehead.
I did do some recon on the mom who was arrested for shoplifting.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I will say, those I think sunglasses. Shoplifting is probably the most glamorous way a woman can get arrested.
I might start getting into shoplifting, honestly.
I love shoplifting. I think it's glamorous. I think it's funny. I think it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I think
my
it's,
God.
I think it would be a cool quirk or a hobby mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah.
I would like.
Yeah, shoplift. Look what I got, Julie. A box of Cheez-Its.
You would start with snacks? Not really. I would start with, I feel like the things that are, right. Brett, will you Google most shoplifted items?
I'll probably start with tube socks and things like that. You can just like kind of jam in your pocket.
That was the big thing. It was makeup and candy.
Yeah.
As a young woman.
Lip balm.
Oh my God.
The easy one.
I feel like there's nothing that makes a woman look more beautiful than shoplifted makeup.
Did you ever shoplift ever? Paul, did you ever shoplift?
Oh, hell yeah. I shoplifted as a kid. I shoplifted not pornography, but close to pornography, which mm-hmm. was the Sports Illustrated swimsuit model.
Yeah. Because
I was too nervous to purchase
ladies
that.
Ladies in their mm-hmm. swimming costumes.
Yeah. So I stole that from a local card shop, a Hallmark store,
those card and candy places had it coming.
Oh yeah,
they were like the way you know if someone likes holding up gas stations, they're like that mm-hmm. for little kids.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's where you got to learn. You got to learn it in the early stages.
And there was a place called Toy and Party that mm-hmm. I used to. I would shoplift candy. I shoplifted like trading cards. I think like Garbage Pail Kids trading cards.
It was a thrill because you also didn't. You knew you weren't stealing anything like too important. So,
right. And nothing you needed. It's just stuff that mm-hmm. you want.
I never did it once. My family had retail businesses. So I was on the opposite side of the thinking of that, where I was just like, it's so hard staying in business. You don't want people coming and grabbing what isn't theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like my family's struggling with being self-employed, and then I would just look at shoplifters as the scourge of the planet. And
oh boy,
I worked
at
a music store once when I was like 13 or 14. This one kid comes in, he goes, "Hey, how much for this guitar polish?" And it was like, "Yeah, it's like $4.95." He's like, "Can I have it?" And I was like, "No, you can't have it." He's like, "Come on, can I have it?" And I was like, "Absolutely not." He's like, "Oh," and I like put it down and walked out as if like he was trying to invoke the kids code or something. Like, yeah, take
that's
it.
Oh my God.
You want to split it with me?
Yeah, split the guitar polish.
The one thing that I stole a lot of, I worked at Blockbuster Video, and this is labeling me as a real nerd. I would steal the cover boxes, the ones that like, because basically what you would do is you take the VHS out, and this is mm-hmm. back in VHS times,
yeah.
you take it out and you'd put it in a Blockbuster case, and then you would just put a cover box in front of it, and then there'd be like three behind it. So there's a bunch of cover boxes in the back room. And what I would do is steal one of those cover boxes, record the VHS to the VHS, and then make my own Blockbuster library in my house.
Thievery. This is initiative.
No, that's initiative. What's going to really happen? The owner's going to be like, "Anybody seen that? There's only three Cool Runnings boxes in the back. There's one missing. Who took the Cool Runnings box?"
Paul's like sweating bullets.
I was like, I remember, because it was like we tried to do it on our lunch breaks, and then we realized there was a camera back there, and we're like sneaking cover boxes of, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it was. Like
that is so cute. That is so endearing.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that.
And then I would love to like bring people into my bedroom, and be like, "Look at all my movies."
Yeah,
you know,
welcome to my Blockbuster.
Blockbuster polio.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, this has been such a blast to talk to you both.
Tom, I think Paul's wrapping it up.
Oh, Paul wrapped us up. He's on the
Paul's
other
side. Paul's done.
This
Tom.
Is what happens when you get it. This is what happens when you get a two way player.
A pro
a two-way
at the
player.
Mic.
He can wrap it up and get wrapped up. He's a guest and a host. He knows how to. As a guest, he can shift into. He can.
He's
he knows
a polymath. He's a polymath.
You got to respect it.
No.
I don't want to overstay my welcome. I love chatting with you both, and I would like to see you in a real-time situation as well.
One day.
I saw Tom a little bit, and that was actually quite fun.
Yes. Now, Paul, you are the best, and we're such a thrill to have you on the show. We appreciate you coming on, and you have so many things going on, and it's so exciting to watch you do what you do in all the ways you do it. It's truly
a joy. Well, you're lovely to say it. I want to say, and I said it to Julie last week when she came on the show they do with Hubel on Thursdays, you both are incredibly great writers too. And you know, like, you're great performers. We all know it. You're hilariously funny. And I'm just like, I love both of your books. And Julie, two books. Tom, I want you to get two another books. One out there.
He will not. Tom, you said you wouldn't.
No, I'm going to write another one.
Tom.
By the way, Tom.
Don't just say what Paul wants to hear.
No, I'll I got to tell you. Paul wants to hear.
When Tom asked me to read his book, which I did. Tom, you'd have to say I read it in record.
Very fast.
I read it in record time because I felt honored that you asked me. And I was like, I haven't really read a book.
Put it down. If you're reading it, it's such an easy read. That's like kind of the ultimate. Whenever people are like, oh, I have a hard time reading, I'm like, you're not reading the right book.
Yeah,
it's the book's fault. It's not your fault. Absolutely. If you're reading a good book, you'll be done right away. Yeah.
But I was talking to Tom because I was like, oh man, this is I'm trying to do something in a similar world, writing something. And Tom said to me, like, oh, it's hard. It's really hard. And I was like, oh, is it? And because I was like having fun, and now I can say, yeah, it's I feel like I'm almost more connected to you both. Already appreciate you on so many levels, but the fact that you've pushed through it, Julie, you did it twice. Mm-hmm. Tom, you did it once. Like I'm kind of blown away by it. TV, yeah, sure. But this, like, wow, it is a tough.
Well, I'll
tough
read
challenge.
Anything you write, Paul.
Yes, can't wait.
We'll see. We'll see.
Thank you so much, Paul, for being on.
We love you. Love to your family, and hi to June.
I will say, I will give it all. And look, if you guys want to, do those Ryan worlds, like recreate them, like a shot for shot recreation.
I might just start doing unboxing videos.
The depressing thing about that is we'll get more views than anything I've ever done. Yeah.
And Brett, throw me some of these savory.
I'll hit you up with some recipes.
I hope you launch your own brand there, and it would be great.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you.
All right. Bye, y'all.
Thanks,
Paul. See you later. Bye.
Friend caught stealing once when I was five.
Shoplifted
some glaze and rubs from the corner store.
I would never. That would be a breaking the unwritten code of the glazes.
So
the
you
glazers
would,
and the rubbers.
If your family were starving, you're telling me you wouldn't shoplift anything for glazes or rubs. You just give them a plain fish.
I mean, the great thing about glaze and a rub is it can be anything. So I mean, I would
what
literally
do you
have to
mean
be
by
completely.
That?
I would have to be completely out of any kind.
What do you
of
mean?
Ingredients.
It mean it could be anything.
I mean, pretty much anything in your kitchen can become a glaze or a rub. I mean, I'll be getting into this in more detail. Detail on glazing with glaze with Baize. Tom, I know you're sorry, you're co-producing that with me, and we're still working on the title.
Glaze more with Blaze yeah. more, is it?
Yeah. Then you should do a show called Blaze with Baize, where the two of you get out that sticky
after show. Yeah.
What happened to Glazed and Confused? That could be the same thing.
Yeah.
Glazed, it's in the running. I mean, it's just really, I mean, Glaze with Baize, we've got everything set up except Kent Bazemore. We haven't got a green light from him
yet. I still think it'd be got Glaze and More with Bazemore.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And that's more, because then they can talk about other things than just glazes and rubs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, everyone, another great double thread in the can for you to go listen to with your friends and your family.
Alone.
Or by yourself. You keep your own company with your pals. Julie and Tom will be your friends for a couple hours, give you a little respite from the living hell that is your life.
And don't be shy and send clips in and rate and review and all that jazz and send stuff to Brett.
But don't rate and review all that jazz. You said rate and review.
Yeah, and review all that jazz, but don't give it any bad reviews.
No, you give it 5 stars.
That's
just
all
like
I
give
need
Double
is
Threat.
The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes for all that jazz going down. That's mm-hmm. all I need.
That's all you need.
Well, and we didn't, I don't think we ever brought this up on the show, but speaking of all that jazz, a listener came up with this idea, but there we have a list on Letterboxd of all the movies that have ever been mentioned on Double Threat. So yes. If you're ever, it's in our link tree. You can click on that. You can find it there. But if you go over to Letterboxd, there is a list of every single movie ever mentioned on Double Threat. And if I'm missing one,
how could that possibly be true?
I
you'll have to fact check this yourself, listener.
Brad, you're gonna have to cross reference this with every episode of Double Threat, just to make sure this is true. We're gonna need it ASAP.
Okay.
Hey, Brett.
Yeah.
How you doing on that list of cross referencing? You got an ETA on that?
God, yeah. I think we're about to have a kid over here, but I think I could
push
that.
Sure. No, of course.
I think I
could
push that a little bit. I pushed that a couple of days.
You do your
family stuff. Of course, you do the family stuff. Oh, hey, Brett.
Yes.
Any? Can I get a 20 on that list of?
Yeah, I actually I haven't started per se yet on the list, but I'm putting it on my to-do list. So the list is on my other list.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay.
Okay.
No. Well,
cool.
If you think that's what's best for the show, then go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.